The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This will be the year where there will be binding codes, financial sanctions and personal liabilities on social media companies. And that day can't come quickly enough. The words of Taoiseach Simon Harris, who joins us now. Taoiseach, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you want to take on the social media giants to force them to bear the responsibility for some of the damage that accrues from their activities.
Well, look, I wouldn't use that adversarial language. I mean, what I want to do is make sure that there's a very clear legal understanding in Ireland and across the European Union that the online world does not operate in some sort of parallel universe, and that the obligations that apply offline in terms of abiding by the laws of the land also apply online, and that some of the concerns that I hear from parents right across the country around their children and their children's well-being and their children's mental health and online bullying and age-inappropriate material, that there are clear structures in place to do that as well. And what I should say, I mean, this conversation often gets terribly kind of excited because people mention, you know, the Elon Musks of the world and try to make it a very personal conversation. The reality is we've been working at a European level for the last couple of years and in the Dáil to put in place the legal framework. And there is now what's called the Digital Services Act at a European level that allows Ireland and indeed every other country in the European Union put in place these binding codes that basically make it very clear here's what a company must abide by. And indeed, if a company doesn't follow the code, the company can be fined. And, you know, I think for platforms that are broadcasting platforms, that's simply really asking them to comply with rules that News Talk would already comply with and publications like newspapers as well.
But you even refer to them by their own language, which is platform, whereas publisher is what we are requiring really for a level playing field. In other words, we have to be careful what we say about people on air. They seem to not have to be careful because they say we're only a platform. We're not saying that. We're not threatening on Taoiseach or we're not threatening Mary Lou MacDonald. We're only the platform upon which these posters, if you like, are placed.
Yeah, and of course that's not true because the laws of the land that are in place offline are also in place online. So you can't defame somebody actually online. You can't threaten to kill somebody online and not find that to be an illegal activity. But the challenge is this. While it might be illegal for you to go online and defame me today, Pat, or it might be illegal for you to go online today and threaten violence against me, what is not yet clear or has not been made clear enough is the obligation on the platform and on the online media company as to what they must do. And the change here is that it will make it very clear what their responsibilities are in terms of making sure, for example, if an Garda Síochána highlight information online that is threatening to do physical harm to someone, that the company can say, sure, we'll take the long weekend and we'll come back to it on Tuesday, but actually have to take immediate action.
Yeah, but even that kind of thing, and I know the technical business is so cumbersome. You know, it's like having a speed limit sign that says, do not exceed 100, and you do, and then you say, well, you've got 2 kilometres to slow down. I mean, that's the equivalent for the social media platforms. They threaten you, and they have, But it takes them days to take it down.
Yeah, this is the reality. Now, look, I think we have to also, when we talk about social media companies, just like we talk about any company, I think we have to acknowledge that the behaviour, the conduct, the compliance varies from company to company, right? But what we're doing here is saying very clearly the era of self-regulation is over. The era of asking you nicely, would you mind taking it down? Those days are going. And this, like I say, is what the Oireachtas has legislated for. It's also what Europe has legislated for. So Ireland is no different to Germany or France or Spain or anywhere else in relation to this. And by the end of this year, for the first time in Ireland, we will have in place that binding code. And we've already submitted a draft version of it to the European Commission because it obviously has to comply with European law and be in line with the Digital Services Act. But it will allow us for the first time to have that regular structure in place that isn't reliant on the goodwill of the companies.
But for example, if someone offends me online, in order to get retribution from that company, I have to go to the High Court or at least to the Circuit Court. And that's just too cumbersome and too expensive. The ordinary person has got to feel there is some agency that will protect them from this kind of intrusion.
They should, yes, but I don't mean to be pedantic, right? I'm sure there's people on Newstalk who offend me from time to time in their comments, and that's fine in a democracy, right? So it's not about freedom.
I meant, by the way, legally offend rather than just insult me. I mean, that's par for the course.
Yeah, exactly. Because some people get terribly excited in misrepresenting what the government is trying to do here. But you're entirely correct. I mean, we have to make sure that the obligation is not placed on the citizen who has been harmed to go all the way to the High Court to get a remedy. And I think the way you get the attention of these companies in terms of ensuring that they put in place the structures to make sure they can resolve these matters is by putting in place financial sanctions. So to be very clear, if you don't comply with the online safety code that Ireland will have in place, the company can be fined up to €20 million or 10% of their turnover. And if they continue to not comply, our law is very clear that ultimately there can be a criminal sanction for a company director. Now, let me also be clear, we don't want to get to this place. What we'd much rather do is have the online code in place, and just like when codes have come in place for traditional media, if I can call it that, that companies then adapt, that they hire the staff, that they have people there that are needed to remove the material as appropriate, that they put in place things. And the other issue that has to be dealt with, absolutely has to be dealt with, is this issue of protecting young people online from age inappropriate material. Yeah. I am extremely worried. We talk so often in this country, quite rightly, about tackling domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. I am extremely worried about the material that young, particularly young men, are being exposed to online at a very age inappropriate way.
So what to do if you're seeing this stuff on platforms that government ministers, indeed yourself, you're known as the TikTok Taoiseach. If those platforms offend and everybody knows that you're on that platform and you're on Twitter or whatever, it's kind of a bit of do as I say, not do as I do.
No, not at all. I mean, there's been times that traditional broadcasters have messed up in terms of the law and they've been sanctioned. It doesn't mean I refuse to go on their platforms or do an interview. I'm not going to withdraw from social media. Nor, by the way, do I want the conversation about social media to be just a negative one. I mean, there are many, many benefits to technology, to online media, to social media. In many ways, it can assist in terms of the democratization of debate. You see sports clubs all around the country utilizing social media and highlighting their matches and success. It can bring communities together. It can fundraise for good causes. There's lots of good things that happen online. But just because that happens doesn't mean you can turn a blind eye to the things that aren't as pleasant and the things that are worrying.
When you have an issue, though, it reminds me of what Henry Kissinger said. You know, his question was, when you want to call Europe, who do you call? When you want to call one of these platforms, who do you call? Elon Musk does not return calls even from heads of state.
Yeah, and this should never be about one personality, because again, I think that sometimes distracts from the substance of the debate. What this should be about is making sure that every company that operates in Ireland, and this is happening right across the EU, knows that here's the law of the land. I need to comply with the law of the land, and if I don't comply with the law of the land, we'll face significant financial sanctions. And I'm absolutely crystal clear in my mind that there is nothing that gets any business to focus the mind other than hitting somebody in the pocket if they're not actually complying with the law. And I should say this, Pat, because we're at a draft stage in relation to this. I mean, I have called two key meetings now for the month of September in terms of online safety. I've called together all relevant government ministers and all the regulators, so Commission Naman, which is the new media commission, the Data Protection Commission, Comreg, the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, and others to come meet us, because I'm conscious that this has so many strands. Like, the Gardaí might have a perspective. Schools have a perspective. There's a perspective from health. And I want to satisfy myself as Taoiseach that the online code that we're putting in place is addressing all of the various issues. And then the second meeting I'm going to chair in the month of September is bringing together the likes of the National Parents Council, the ISPCC, the Children's Rights Alliance, and the Irish Council for Civil Liberties, again, to get their perspective in terms of the issues that they see. So we have a big chance to get this right this year, and I'm absolutely determined we do.
All right. Moving on to other matters, the election, which you maintain will be in 2025, that should go the full term. I was talking to Bertie Ahern the other day, bumped into him, and I asked him what was his take on it. And he said, it has to be November. And I said, why? He said, because that gives you a second chance. If events, dear boy, events interfere, I'm paraphrasing Bertie now, he didn't put it this way. If events, dear boy, events intervene, then you've got a second go in the new year. So you've got to give yourself that second chance, because if events intervene in February, you're bunched.
Well, I too chatted to Bertie last week as well, but that was mainly on the issue of Northern Ireland and learning from his experience around the Good Friday Agreement. But no, look, I am not sure your heart is even in the question, because I get asked about 15 times a day about when is the general election going to be. And the reality is,
I'm just talking about political common sense there, you know.
Sure, and what I can tell you is I don't think people fixate on the date of the election. There is going to be an election by March. When I became the leader of Fine Gael, I was asked for one clear commitment by the other two party leaders, and that was that the government would go full term. I gave that commitment. My position hasn't changed in relation to it. I do think, though, I mean, I have an old-fashioned view for a relatively young politician that actually, if you work hard and deliver for people and then ask them to vote for you, they might. And I think that's actually more important than the date of the general election in terms of the outcome of that election.
Now, you've lost so many of your well-known faces from your parliamentary party. So are you depending on kind of brand Fine Gael doing the trick, as it did for Sinn Féin the last time? You may remember that one of their candidates actually was on holiday during the election, not believing they would be elected, and they were. So are you depending on that kind of strategy, brand Fine Gael, rather than maybe some of the lesser known faces that you'd be putting forward?
No, not at all. I mean, look, there's a number of people who are retiring at the next election. In many ways, that wouldn't be a surprise in most cases, either on health grounds or indeed, look, people can reach an age where they're entitled to retire or have done a long service. Politics can be quite grueling, and certainly there's an intensity to politics that maybe wasn't there in the past, or certainly not to the same degree. But what I can tell you is this. Because we had a very good local election, certainly compared to what all the pundits were predicting, we're finding new candidates coming forward right across the length and breadth of the country, including new candidates who got very, very good votes from their community in the local elections, candidates who are very established and have good track records of working in their community. And what's actually very interesting is we're planning on having all our conventions finished by the end of next month, so we can give our candidates time to be in the field and to be working and to be
identified. And so you could go in November if needs must.
Well, it's very interesting. I'll come back to that one. What I was basically trying to say there was that what is very clear is that there's a lot of competition to be a Fine Gael candidate. And we've had so many, including in Offaly last night, we've had so many contested conventions where people are saying, I want to be the next Fine Gael TD. So I can assure our opponents and critics who are worried about our well-being that we have lots and lots of people coming forward and wanting to be the next TD, and I'm looking forward to working with them. Of course, every political party would be utterly imprudent at this stage of the electoral cycle not to be preparing.
Now let's talk international affairs and what's going on in Gaza, the ongoing war in Gaza. And there are a number of questions which you have addressed about the overflight of armaments from the United States to Israel, how no permissions have been sought and therefore no permissions given, but those overflights have happened. Also, we are still customers of the Israeli defense industry. We buy from them.
So look, we took a decision yesterday that we are not going to purchase any further defense material or equipment from Israel. And we're doing this in line with the ruling of the International Court of Justice. I think it's really important when an international court makes substantive findings that those findings are given effect in every way. And I have consistently said, I said it to President Macron in Paris this week, I've said it everywhere I've gone, at home and abroad, publicly and privately, we must use every lever at our disposal to maximise the pressure on the Netanyahu government to bring a cessation of violence. And that therefore the measure that we've decided to take in relation to defence equipment is an appropriate one that we took yesterday as a further step, in addition to all of the other steps that we've taken, recognising the state of Palestine, voting at the UN in favour of Palestine, increasing the humanitarian aid budget we provide to the UN agency, and a range of other steps.
But there are still countries within the EU who favour maintaining trade relations with Israel, whereas Ireland wants that whole arrangement reviewed.
That's the God's honest truth, and we need to be honest with people in relation to this. Now, today I'm going to write to the Attorney General and I'm going to seek fresh legal advice in relation to the entire matter of trade in the context of the most recent International Court of Justice ruling, because it has been the absolute clear legal advice from successive Attorney Generals that trade is a European competency, and therefore we need to keep making the case at a European level, which I do with my peers and counterparts. But I do want the Attorney General to provide me with fresh legal advice in light of the most recent ICJ judgment over the summer months. But for now, we're continuing to call at an EU level for a full review of the trade agreement between the EU and Israel, because that has human rights clauses, and the human rights clauses aren't in there to pad out the document. They have to have real meaning and real effect. I make this point to every European president and prime minister I meet, and we'll continue to advocate for that. And we've also made the decision specifically in relation to defence equipment, which we believe is legally possible.
Now, a text which has come in. Can you ask the Taoiseach what he and the government is going to do about Dublin City? I went on my lunch break the other day. I was almost in tears walking back to my office. Drunks, drug addicts, shops closed down, people lying drunk outside our main shopping street. A decoy Garda car lies empty on O'Connell Street every day. Where are the Gardaí? That's from Clara. An observation which would be echoed by many people. We don't like what's been happening to Dublin City.
Yes, look, I think Dublin City is a great and proud capital city. I also think it's a city that's in need of urgent attention, investment and a plan and a vision. When I became Taoiseach, you may remember, in fact, even before I became Taoiseach at my Ardèche, I said I was going to appoint a Dublin City Centre task force, that I wanted somebody to come back with 5, 10, 15 actions that we could take, some for the council, some for the government, to revitalise, rejuvenate our capital city. Very pleased to let you know that I'm due to receive the outcome of that literally next week, I think, certainly within the next few days. And I hope to be in a position to bring that to government and publish it in September, and then see if we can make progress both through funding for the council and the government. You see, because the issue here is it doesn't fall to any one person, right, or any one agency. We need lots of different people doing lots of different things. I'll give you one example. I think the GPO currently, as such a beautiful building and such a historic building, I think it's wasted. In terms of reaching its full potential. You know, Ampost moved out of the GPO. There is space in the GPO. Why not have a big vision? Like, let's bring people onto O'Connell Street. Let's ensure there's a reason for families and people to want to go and visit O'Connell Street. And I think the potential of the GPO to become a real focal point. On Gardaí, I take the point, but I would make this point too. I mean, this is the year where Gardaí numbers are beginning to grow. We saw 157 trainee Gardaí come out of, come out of Templemore over the summer. There's another class due out in September. There's a new class coming out every 12 weeks now, and Templemore hasn't been as busy in many, many, many years. A lot of those Gardaí are being allocated to Dublin, and Dublin Gardaí now have body cams as well, which is something that I certainly would have worked on and prioritised.
But the reassurance that people need, they say they go to, and they name them city after city in Europe, and they feel comfortable walking around, they feel safe, even in areas where there might be known problems. Frankfurt was a city quoted as such, but there are so many police around, and any incident is dealt with quickly, expeditiously, so that that feeling of security and safety returns. I mean, you hardly see a Garda a lot of the time on O'Connell Street. There should be one literally on every corner, or two, and they should be appropriately equipped to deal with public order.
Yeah, I take the broad point. I think we do need to see more Gardaí on our streets in Dublin, and indeed on our streets right across the country. That is why we are investing more than ever in training more Gardaí. It's why we've increased the retirement age. It's why we've increased the age at which you can become a guard. It's why we've worked to increase the training allowance for anyone who signs up. But I would say this too, that when I talk to people, and I talk to a lot of communities in Dublin and across the country about safety, absolutely, Garda presence is an important point. So too do they talk about the importance of street lighting. So too do they talk about the importance of being able to get a taxi, get a bus, the public transport network, not being left kind of waiting around, worrying how they get home after a night out. So the purpose of the Dublin City Centre Task Force and the purpose of our community safety partnerships is to bring everyone around the table to say, well, what can I do? What role can my agency play? And I'm very encouraged that we're going to have an exciting plan for Dublin within the next couple of weeks.
Looking at a headline in the Daily Mail, the Irish Daily Mail this morning, 40% of new bills nationwide sold to bulk buyers. And we know that the state, in the form of councils and so on, are bulk buyers too. But in Dublin, it's even worse. Only 4 of every 10 new homes built was available for people to purchase. I mean, we've got that policy wrong, haven't we? Turning a generation into a generation of renters for life, and also alerting them to the fact that their own pensions will not be able to pay those rents when the time comes.
No, so look, we haven't gotten that policy wrong, because in fairness to you, as you've acknowledged, when we talk about bulk buyers, that includes local authorities, it includes approved housing bodies, It includes people providing homes for people with a disability, for older people. It includes charities, many with proud traditions working in the city. So let me be very clear. If we weren't seeing this happen, you would be saying to me, why are social housing lists why are we not making any progress? Last year, we saw the highest number of local authority homes provided in this country since 1975. This year, we're likely to see the same. And that's after the lost decade that everybody knows about because of the mismanagement of this country and the financial crisis.
But the substantive point that if people if they're renters for life, they won't be able to afford, with normal inflation, never mind extreme inflation, they won't be able to afford out of their pensions to continue to pay rent. So what happens then?
So I'm absolutely clear that home ownership is what people in this country want. There'll always be some who need to rent, some who wish to rent, but the majority of people in this country still want to own their own home. Culturally, I believe that's where we are in Ireland. And home ownership remains my number one priority when it comes to housing. Now, we have seen, and I won't drown your listeners' ears with statistics, but we are now seeing so many people buy their first home each and every week, around 500 first-time buyers every single week buying their new home. We're seeing a number of supports in place that are providing people's tax back in terms of financial assistance to help them purchase their home worth tens of thousands of euro. But I'm also clear on this. While I can point to the fact that mortgage drawdowns are up, house commencements are up, house completions are up, 2024 will be the year in which we saw the greatest number of homes begin construction and the greatest number of homes complete construction since the IMF were in town. I mean, that is some progress in fairness. Having said that, I am crystal clear that we need to lift the scale of ambition. And that's why I was the first to call out, that we would need to get to at least 50,000 homes a year each year over the course of the second half of this decade. In other words, we need to build at least 250,000 more homes for people to buy between now and the end of 2030.
People listening to that statement from you will say, you think you were in opposition.
No, people listening to that statement from me, who evaluate it carefully, would also say, hang on a second, when I came to government in 2011, when my party came to government in 2011, 6,700 homes, I think, were built that year. This year, we'll see well above close to 40,000 homes built this year, despite the fact that we had to shut down the construction sector not once but twice because of a global pandemic. People see right across the country now lots of home building underway. They see it, I see it, but they also know and I know that it's not yet enough. And that's why this government and me as Taoiseach will this year set revised housing targets. We'll do it before the end of the year. That will not just tell people how many homes we're going to build each year, but will actually show the plan in terms of how you deliver it. We've rebuilt the construction sector, rebuilt the banking sector, and now getting roofs over people's heads is the most important.
But I'm looking at the blocks that are being built, and it's almost like Soviet blocks going back, apartment after apartment block, too close together, no green space. I saw it in my own area, also saw it passing a place called Charlesland around City West area on the way to the airport. You know, the kind of stuff we're building is storing up social problems for the future.
I must say that's not my experience, and I do see a lot of house construction. I live in County Wicklow, as people will know, and I see a huge amount of new housing being built
That's what people want. They don't want necessarily blocks with virtually no daylight between them. People looking from each other's balconies into each other's bedrooms.
Yeah, look, I think it is important, even in a housing crisis of supply, that we continue to maintain standards. I mean, I was out in Clonburris recently in Lucan, an incredible example of where there is a very, very, very significant number of homes being built and mixed tenure, you know, cost rental, homes for older people, local authority houses and private houses by I think Cairn developers. But they've also built, I think it's six schools out there. There's two train stations. There's a real biodiversity project underway. There's significant green space. So I do think, particularly where the state gets involved, I do think planning these things out so we learn from the mistakes of past decades where there was a rush to build houses, but then people trying to retrofit a sense of community and community infrastructure after. That's certainly not the way to do it.
Now, just a couple of things about the Garda coming in on the text. Can you ask the Taoiseach, as a Garda, how can we keep people in the job as there are so many resigning? I've never seen it like that. How can we keep good people if we can barely even get people to apply for senior leadership positions? Lack of this, lack of that, lack of prison spaces. Other agencies, if they'd only start doing their job and stop landing us with everything from dealing with homelessness to sorting out the wild west of social media. We cannot cover everything at the moment. If you want stations open, you can't have members on the beat. We need to move away from constabulary old ways That's from a frustrated guard close to packing it in. Drew Harris can recruit as many Gardaí as he wants, but with his policy of introducing computer system after computer system, tying guards to their desks for more of their working day, it won't matter and the public will not see increased numbers of guards on the street. Ask any serving guard about the new IMS system, and that's not even mentioning the retention issue. Another frustrated guard. So,
well, look, I suppose we can all have grievances about aspects of our job, and there's ways of addressing them, and that's important. And the government will continue to engage with the Garda rep bodies. But let's also be clear. I mean, there's a huge amount of investment. To answer the first texter's question, I mean, what do you do to attract more people to be a guard? Well, the first thing you do is you say to the Gardaí and their families, "We can keep you safe." And I have been really, really strong on this with the Minister for Justice. I mean, we need to provide all our guards with body cams, so when a guard is going out on patrol, they know it's not only the person shouting and roaring at them, waving a camera in their face, but that they actually have a camera on them that keeps them safe and keeps the public safe. We're investing more in the equipment that our Gardaí have, again, to help them keep public order and to be safe. The best way you help Gardaí is by getting more of them, so guards have more colleagues. That's why Temple Moor, the Garda Training College, is busier than it's ever been. But we also need to see, and look, we've increased Garda pay, we've increase the training allowance. We do also need to see other things, and I've seen this in my own Garda district. We need to understand what a Garda patrol is and what it isn't. In my view, a Garda patrol is when a guard is out on the beat, on their feet, walking through a town in a village. And when I talk to people right across this country, and when I talk to Gardaí, that's what they want to see. People want to see the guard walking up and down the main street. And I will continue to support, as will the minister, the civilianisation of certain aspects of An Garda Síochána, so we don't have Gardaí doing unnecessary paperwork. But also what I'll ask in return is that we see Gardaí on that beat, walking on the street. We don't need drive-by patrols. We need people actually out walking into shops, saying hello to people, walking. And that is the key to successful community policing. And I know the Gardaí feel very strongly about that because that's what they tell me when I meet them as well. So we need to free them up from bureaucracy. I fully agree with that. Being a guard is a tough job, absolutely tough job. But it is also a job that is worth doing. And I'm very proud of the work of the Gardaí, and I'm very grateful to the men and women of An Garda Síochána for the job they do in keeping us all safe.
On that note, Taoiseach Simon Harris, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.